It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Good evening. Ella Baker, a giant of the civil rights movement, left us with this wisdom. Give people light, and they will find the way. Give people light. Those are words for our time. The current president has cloaked American darkness for much too long. Too much anger, too much fear, too much division. Here and now, I give you my word. If you entrust me with the presidency, I will draw on the best of us, not the worst. I'll be an ally of the light, not the darkness. It's time for us, for we the people, to come together. And make no mistake, united we can and will overcome this season of darkness in America. We'll choose hope over fear, facts over fiction, fairness over privilege. I'm a proud Democrat, and I'll be proud to carry the banner of our party into the general election. So it's with great honor and humility I accept this nomination for President of the United States of America.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. That was, of course, Joe Biden accepting the nomination from the Democrats last week to be the candidate for President of the United States. And I want to talk about that a little bit today because I missed the whole week. And I want to, first of all, thank Fred Jackson, our news guy who has his hands full already, for filling in for me, and also Walker Wildman, also very busy. I'm very grateful. And Kevin Jackson, who came in for the first time for a couple of days. And Kevin, I've known for a long time, and he's so smart, and I wish I had heard it. I hope you enjoyed him as much as I have enjoyed listening and talking to Kevin in the past. So anyway, I'm back and ready to go. Ready, honestly, with just a few days, what I don't know, 80 days, something like that, left before we have the election. The time is just precious, and so I'm grateful for a time to rest and come back to you refreshed and ready to just hang on and fasten our seatbelts as this thing approaches. I want to talk a little bit about Joe Biden. I want to talk a little bit about the Democratic Convention last week because I didn't get to, but just a bit, okay? So Joe Biden, of course, was featured as this really nice, great guy and just decent and all of these things. And I hate to tell you this, but that's just first right up not true. Joe Biden has a terrible temper. If you haven't forgotten that, he, even in the campaign trail this cycle, he lost his temper with so many people. Remember the old dog-faced pony soldier? You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier. He uses that a lot. Nobody can quite figure out where that comes from, but that's when he's lost his temper with Democratic supporters. One guy he called fat. I talked about how Joe Biden, was fit. He ran every day, but you're fat and you're a liar. And I mean, there are so many examples of that. He is not a nice person. He's nicer when he's in his basement and there's no one around. But nice person, I don't think so. I think about those videos of him touching young girls inappropriately. I'm not talking about sexually because that's not on video. I'm talking about hovering over them. That's just widely known in D.C. that he's inappropriate in terms of his stroking their hair and breathing their hair. It's not healthy. Plus, he's been accused, of course, of sexual assault. And that accuser has just fallen off the face of the map because no one will listen to her. With Tara Reid, she was one of his employees, and that's just ignored. She was, you know, supporter of Joe Biden, and she has a very incredible story to tell, which she tried to tell, but it went silent quickly. So I don't think Mr. Nice Guy's right. Now, one last thing, remind you, I know this because of people that we know I've told you before, but I'll repeat, this is why he's not a nice guy. A nice guy does not have female secret service agents in his presence when he's in his residence and insist that he should be able to swim in the nude, which is what he did. And the female secret service agents asked him not to. It was embarrassing for them, but he did not listen because he did not care. I don't think that's decent. I don't know what that means. That's not an overt. We used to call people like that who expose themselves. We had names for that, but I don't think he's decent. So I'm just telling you. And we also know that he's a plagiarist. He actually had to drop out of the race back in the 80s. He's run several times because he's so badly plagiarized from other sources. So he's not a nice guy. I don't care what they said last week. Joe Biden is not known as a nice guy. He has a great smile. I'll give you that. He's got a great smile, but he's not a nice guy, and he's not a decent guy. So when you're talking about, okay, so you're going to come back at me and say, what about Donald Trump? Well, we'll talk about that on another day, but we're talking about Joe Biden because he was the one who was presented as this decent, nice guy last week. Kamala Harris, the decent, nice vice presidential candidate, had a few things to say, and I want you to hear, of course, she has her own history. Some would say that it's pretty bleak. It doesn't make her no one talked about her qualifications, but Kamala has a history that's well known for, let's say, working her way up the ladder in a not a very good way. But Kamala Harris, then of course, is her dad is Jamaican, and her mother is Indian, Eastern Indian. She's not an American black. And yet she wears that, you know, she tries to be that, tries to talk like that, just like Barack Obama did, tried to sound like an American black when he was actually Kenyan and from Kansas. His mother was from Kansas, his grandparents. But Kamala had to speak about racism because that's what the Democrats have to speak about. And this is the portion I want you to hear, clip 6.
The loss of normalcy, and yes, the loss of certainty. And while this virus touches us all, we got to be honest, it is not an equal opportunity offender. Black, Latino, and Indigenous people are suffering and dying disproportionately. And this is not a coincidence. It is the effect of structural racism, of inequities in education and technology, healthcare and housing, job security and transportation. The injustice in reproductive and maternal health care, in the excessive use of force by police, and in our broader criminal justice system. This virus, it has no eyes, and yet it knows exactly how we see each other and how we treat each other. And let's be clear. There is no vaccine for racism.
Do you really think, any of you, that Kamala Harris has suffered from racism? I'm not saying there's no racism in this country. Do you think Kamala Harris has suffered from racism? Do you think she can identify with that? She's from a well-off family. She's had nothing, but she's done very well. She's an attorney. She was Attorney General of California. She dresses beautifully. She had a famous affair with the former governor of California when she was just a very young girl, Willie Brown, and many people think that that's part of what started her career. We know that because he talked about it, so that's how we know that. Kamala seems to have done very well, and that's what bothers me, is then how can you buy into that? Isn't that manipulation? I believe so, and I think that's what we've seen from her many, many times. And the thing that the tag that she wears around her neck is that she just she's willing to say whatever. Remember how she went after Joe Biden during the debates and accused him of being a racist? And now suddenly he's all that and a box of rocks. So Kamala is that's the vice presidential candidate for the Democrats. And of course, before they started their convention last week, they had some instructions. And you probably heard this, but in case you missed it, this is clip 3.
Many of the videos and pictures you're about to see were recorded before COVID, which is why the kids are not social distancing. However, the audio was recorded over the past month. You may rise or kneel if you are able, per your preference.
All right, that's enough. You may rise or kneel for this anthem. So I don't think you'll be hearing that at the RNC tonight when it starts, that you are have permission or welcome to kneel during the anthem. I don't think that's going to happen, but that's how they began their convention. I think there's a lot to say about what happened last week, but that's I wanted to play a Barack Obama clip, but I think I'm going to run out of time here because I want to talk about what's happening tonight, because this is the time when the Republican convention starts. The president is scheduled to be there every night. In traditional conventions, usually the candidate is like somewhere else until the very last night, and then the excitement builds, and then the candidate comes out and speaks. And I don't know if Joe Biden was present in any other of those recorded or, recorded events or from his basement any other earlier time in the week. I kind of don't think so, at least not much. And he did sort of follow tradition. But President Trump is going to be on every single night during the 10 o'clock hour. And his actual speech will take place on Thursday. Tonight, there are lots of speakers, but the ones I score my favorites, Matt Gaetz and Jim Jordan, Ambassador Nikki Haley, and also Georgia State Representative Vernon Jones. I met Vernon actually at the Trump Hotel in Washington just a few weeks ago. He's the guy that I played a clip of him a couple of weeks ago. He was on MSNBC and handed the black host, his hat. I mean, he really was terrific. He's a Democrat from Georgia, so he's going to be speaking tonight. And then I believe it's tonight. Oh, Mark and Patricia Poklosky. They're that couple from St. Louis that are under in some sort of investigation because they took their guns out to protect themselves as Black Lives Matter protesters were, yelling at them, had broken through the gate and were surrounding their house. And so that'll be really something to hear them speak tonight. Donald Trump Jr. will speak tonight as well. Tomorrow night, Melania Trump, Nicholas Sandman. I can't wait to hear him speak. Nicholas is that high school student from Covington, Kentucky. Covington High School in Kentucky, and he was the one who was the object of ridicule, accused of being a racist when the American Indian got up in his face. He and Nick and his buddies were at the pro-life march in D.C. last year. I think it was last January. Might have been the year before that. And so pretty much the Wall Street, the newspapers, New York Times and others, Washington Post, really completely, and CNN were sued because they disparaged Nick and made him look like a racist when it wasn't at all what was happening. He's won hundreds of millions of dollars from them, as a matter of fact. So he'll be speaking tomorrow night. On Wednesday night, one of my favorites, Dan Crenshaw, a congressman from Texas, is speaking. There are a lot of people speaking, so I'm just pulling out a couple that I'm looking forward to. Burgess Owens, the former football player, will be speaking. He's great. And Franklin Graham will be speaking on Thursday night. So that's just the short list. I'll tell you more as we go along, but it should be very interesting. How could it not be? By the way, one of the big differences between the platforms of President Trump and Joe Biden is that Joe Biden has announced that he would be willing to shut the country down to stop coronavirus. And it's interesting because the country is shut down. I'm seeing, I don't know about you, but I've noticed more and more businesses closing. I can hardly stand it. I read that Amazon's profits are up 100%. Target's are up something like 80%. And down it goes, the list of the big stores that were able to make, for some reason, they had special dispensation. They were able to open and do business. And meanwhile, all the businesses owned by, hardworking middle-class Americans are going under. Lots of them are going under, like we're talking 20, 30%. And probably more if this thing keeps up. And so if Joe Biden is elected, and if Dr. Fauci or whoever says the word, he'll close down the whole country. I'm telling you, that's a big difference right there. That's enough to make me say, I believe there's a clear choice on that because we will not survive that. And you do understand that this is the classic Marxist, this is classic Marxism to destroy the middle class. And those of you that are pastors and churches or you own charities, it is the middle class that supports you. It's not the rich donors and it's not the poor donors. This is how the Marxists clean house. They destroy the middle class, and that's what's happening. All right, coming back, we're going to talk about the voting situation, mail-in voting. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning.
A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is an excellent way to provide yourself with guaranteed permanent income while at the same time supporting the American Family Association. Here's what one supporter told us.
I very much want to see God's word continue into the next generation. This is a way I can help AFA spread the truth and promote their biblical stand. My experience with the AFA Foundation continues to remind me that I have a small part in helping AFA in the battle for our nation's values.
Financial planning is essential to your family. A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is one way you can support AFA and the health of our nation. The planners at the AFA Foundation are here to help you do the most with your finances. You can call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345, find us on Facebook, or email foundation@afa.net, and learn whether a charitable gift annuity is right for you.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Jonathan Plutzik, Chairman of the Board for the Federal National Mortgage Association, otherwise known as Fannie Mae. Fannie Mae works to create more mortgage opportunities in the United States. 2 Corinthians 9:6 reminds us of the importance of investing. Remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Jonathan Plutzik as he helps create investment opportunities in this country. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Wondering how you'll finish your degree now? At Liberty University, we want to help. So when you transfer into one of our more than 100 undergraduate online programs this fall, you could earn up to $3,600 in transfer student scholarships, or more if you live in Virginia. That means you could pay less than $900 per course and transfer in up to 75% of your degree. That's up to 90 credits. Save time and money at a school that's been helping students like you for over 30 years. Learn more by texting DEGREE to 49595. That's DEGREE to 49595.
Kindergartners who fail to wear a mask to school could go to jail. That's the law of the land in Utah. The governor cracking down on children who show up to class without wearing a face mask. The governor's office says any student or staff member who does not wear a mask can be charged with a misdemeanor, grades K through 12. It's up to individual school districts to enforce the law. The Salt Lake Tribune says if school leaders pursue criminal charges, youngsters could be facing a Class B misdemeanor, punishable by a $1,000 fine and 6 months behind bars. Can you imagine a police officer tossing a five-year-old in county lockup for not wearing a face mask? The governor of Utah should cover his face in shame. Be sure to listen to my national radio show, noon to 3 Eastern, the live stream and the podcast available free of charge at toddstarnes.com.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Do you hear that? That's our democracy crumbling. I want all of my neighbors, I want all of America to know why the People's House is here for an emergency vote on Saturday while the Senate Majority Leader McConnell went on vacation. We are experiencing a global pandemic, and now our U.S. Postal Service is under attack. Let it be clear, this administration is waging an authoritarian campaign to sabotage this election by manipulating the Postal Service to suppress our votes, and they are threatening the livelihood of our postal workers, our seniors, our veterans, and so many more in the process. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is fascism. We will not stand for this now or ever. In Michigan right now, machines capable of sorting 35,000 pieces of mail per hour have disappeared from postal facilities. Brave workers are blowing the whistle and saying that they've never seen anything like this, Madam Chair. We must put an end to it. I say to the White House, hands off the United States Postal Service. Let's make it clear. through this law to fund our Postal Service and undo these harmful attacks and restore normal operations.
Time has expired.
Thank you, and I yield.
All right. That was Rashida Tlaib, Congresswoman, speaking on the floor when the House, of course, has been absent for months. They can't go in person because it's so very dangerous for them. But they showed up in Washington because there's a crisis, you see, according to them, and that is President Trump is actually picking up these mailboxes and carrying them off in trucks, the metal mailboxes, so that we cannot have mail-in balloting. And he's undermining the post office. He's put his own friend in to head the post office service in June, and so they had, his name is Louis DeJoy, and he was in a hearing last week. He's going to be back again Monday. They're going to grill him about, you know, this nefarious practice. The Wall Street Journal is actually calling what's happening on the Hill a made-up-for-TV phony political crisis. In an article that's called Nancy Pelosi's Gone Postal, they kind of itemize why this is actually embarrassingly ridiculous. But let's talk about it. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I do have strong feelings. And I've asked Hans von Spakovsky to join us. Hans, of course, is the senior legal fellow for the Heritage Foundation, and he's in charge of their election project, and he knows all things election. So I've asked him to join us. Hans, good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Sandy, it's great to be with you again.
All right. So, Hans, what exactly is the accusation, maybe better put than what I just said, and what's actually the truth? What do we know about what's actually happened with the post office and President Trump?
The claim is that the president is shutting down all these postal facilities and getting rid of mailboxes so that people can't have their absentee ballots delivered. But that is a fantasy. I mean, that is just simply not true. All that's going on is that the new head of the Postal Service has been trying to put in reforms to modernize and make the Postal Service more effective. I'm sure you know this, Sandy. They've been losing money for years. I think in the last quarter they lost over $2 billion. And it's because they're badly managed, badly organized, and they have seven unions that oppose any and all reforms that would make them more efficient and make them run the way private companies efficiently run, like Federal Express. That's not the U.S. Postal Service. And, you know, they're talking about mailboxes being taken out of service. You know, I was actually on the Mark Levin show this weekend, and Mark pointed out that during the Obama administration, something like 14,000 mailboxes around the country were taken out of service. That's standard U.S. Postal Service operational procedures when boxes don't collect a certain number of envelopes a day, because that means people aren't using them. The idea that there's some kind of deliberate, intentional conduct going on is just—it's just a fantasy being made up by the left for political reasons.
But of course, it works. Because Hans, you know, the post office is central to all of our lives. We've grown up with it. A lot of us know, or I remember my boyfriend's father used to be the head of the post office in my hometown. You know, they delivered your mail. You knew the mailman, and we depend on them. And the mail people, we, you know, feel a little protective of. We don't want them to be hurt. And also, the U.S. Post Office has become a very political organization since I was a kid. And as you said, unionized, and they are very much pro-democratic, wouldn't you say?
Well, I think their unions just endorsed Joe Biden for the presidency. So anything coming out of their mouths claiming some kind of intentional misconduct by the administration, you have to understand is part of their political stance.
Yeah. You know, I thought it was really, really ironic, and I'm sure you did too, that Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney is the one who has her name on the bill that was passed on Saturday by the House, this $25 billion bailout bill that the president says he won't sign, because Carolyn Maloney has been caught up in the whole hassle over mail-in balloting. Can you explain that part of the irony, Hans?
Well, look, there have been problems with absentee ballots all over the country, by the way, including in Michigan, where they just had an August 4th primary. And there, for example, is a story in the Detroit News about that, about how the ballot count of the absentee ballots is so inaccurate that Wayne County doesn't know what to do about it. The ballot counts that were recorded in 72% of Detroit's absentee voting precincts didn't match the number of ballots cast. And they don't know what to do about it because things are so bad there in terms of chaos and election officials having messed up the election.
And was this the is this the primary for the entire state of Michigan on that date? Or this is county?
Yeah, I believe it was.
Okay. Yeah. All right. But it's in this particular county where they have such a discrepancy between the number of ballots cast and people that are actually authorized to vote. What do people do in a case like that? What is the recourse?
Well, I don't know, because part of the evidence that's coming out about that is that in the middle of the night, as they were processing absentee ballots, they just started counting them without actually first verifying the signatures on the ballots, checking the voter registration list to make sure it had come in from a real voter. And in a situation like that, I'm not sure you could do anything other than try to have a new election.
Well, so then I mentioned Carolyn Maloney, and her situation is that she was she's been challenged from the left. I can't think of his name. Pie or something like that. They finally, after 2 weeks, declared her the winner, and now her challenger, again, who's a part of the left, he's more like a Ocasio-Cortez in terms of his positions, is challenging the results in her own election. And so then the Congress comes back and they have her be the one to sponsor this bill, whereas she supposedly is accusing the president of interfering with mail-in balloting. That's the irony I was referring to, Hans.
I apologize. Yeah, in the New York primary, what a mess that has been, too. And again, yeah, it was the left pushing folks to vote by absentee ballot. And when there was a huge surge, the state, not only was the state unprepared to handle it, but neither was the Postal Service. And it took them 6 weeks to count the vote, and then litigation was filed over the outcome because the Postal Service didn't do things like they didn't postmark the envelopes of the absentee ballots that people were sending back. And so election officials rejected them, saying, well, we don't know if these were cast after the election. And because of that, if you can believe this, one in five ballots in New York were rejected. That is a 20% disenfranchisement rate, and that's the kind of thing we can expect if we have this big push for absentee or mail-in ballots all over the country in November.
Well, and of course, the elections in the last, I can't even go back far enough, they've been so close for so long. I can't remember an election that was so easily declared since, and I could be wrong about this, Hans, but Ronald Reagan won a resounding win. But other than that, it seems like all these presidential elections and now even the down-the-ballot elections are getting extremely close, so that when you're talking about missing 20% of the ballots, it could make all the difference in the world on who wins.
Oh, absolutely. Look at it this way. Because of the rejection rate in New York City, over 80,000 ballots were rejected. Election officials said we're not going to count them because they didn't comply with state law. I think wasn't Donald Trump's win in Pennsylvania about 40,000 votes?
Something like that. Very thin in many states. Wisconsin close too. So, I mean,
yeah.
And of course, that, not to mention all the other races we talk about, Hans, the congressional races, the Senate races, there's so much at play every year. But this year especially, I think it's especially close and divided. You have, I want people to understand that you really are one of the nation's leading experts on this issue. And you just published a piece on this August the 19th. About this whole business of what this might do to the presidential election. You asked the question, if there is a mess and we don't have a clear winner, what do we do? So I want to ask you that question. What do we do if it's a presidential election and we have all these messy absentee ballots or mail-in voting and they don't come in and we have the chaos at the national level that we're having in these states? What would happen, Hans?
Well, if we haven't determined who actually won the presidency by January 20th, January 20th is when the president's term ends and a new president, whoever won the election, is inaugurated. Congress passed a law quite some time ago that says that if the president, vice president, haven't been determined by inauguration day, the acting president will become the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, who will stay in that position until the election has been determined.
Wait. What did you just say? Did you say the Speaker or the acting president would be the president?
The Speaker of the U.S. House will become the acting president.
So Nancy Pelosi.
Yes. Assuming she has been reelected and she has been re-chosen as the Speaker, which, as you know, seems pretty certain. In her last election, she got 86% of the vote in her particular congressional district. So, yes, she would become the acting president if neither candidate has yet won enough Electoral College votes to be the president.
Hans, quickly, where are we with states? I know a couple of states, at least one, has ordered mail-in balloting for the entire state. I forgot what state it is, but where are we with that in terms of states and how they're handling this and dictating this?
We're still in the midst of court battles over this. Ohio has, the governor there has said they're going to do it. Nevada has said they're going to do it. California has said they're going to do it. But there are lawsuits in those states contesting that and trying to prevent that from happening. So, frankly, Sandy, things are still very much up in the air on what's going to happen in November. And in particular, look, a lot of election officials right now are trying to decide, well, how many polling places are we going to have open? Are we going to have our regular number? Are we going to reduce it because we expect everybody to vote by mail? And they're having real problems recruiting folks to work in the polling places because of the paranoia about COVID-19.
So am I to conclude that if people want to make sure that things, that the election proceeds, like in Detroit County, the county in Detroit, we know that it was a poll watcher who brought it to our attention, the discrepancy between the logs and the ballots. So is it true? Could we say then that people listening might want to volunteer to be poll watchers?
Not to be poll watchers. I mean, the first thing they ought to do is volunteer to get paid to be a poll worker. Be somebody who's actually working in the polls and can make sure that the laws and regulations are being followed. If you don't have time to do that, then yeah, be a poll watcher. Your day may not be as long. But the other thing that people ought to be doing right now is calling their local county election officials and demanding that they be treated as VIPs, vote in person. They should demand their right to vote in person and to put their ballot into the ballot box where they know it, so they know it's going to get voted, rather than trusting the U.S. Postal Service to maybe, perhaps, deliver it on time.
All right. So two things. Because people are, and rightfully so, Hans, they want to know what they can do. They hear this stuff and they go, you know, they gnash their teeth and bite their nails and don't know what they can do. So I do think volunteering to be a paid poll worker, I guess you'd have to contact your local party official for that, right? The head of your party in your county?
You can, but you can also just call the county. Every county in the country or townships in places like Michigan have in the county government or the town government, they have an election department. And those are the folks responsible for choosing the polling places and putting personnel into the polling places.
Okay. All right. So there, call the county election person. You can just call your county main number and ask for that. And then volunteer. Well, no, get hired to be working
hired
in the poll.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the second thing that Hans just said is to call your local county clerk or county officials and tell them that you demand you have the right to vote in person. You do not want to do mail-in balloting. The problem is, Hans, even if you verify your identity, your ballot could be lost or somebody could toss it. So it's really not safe for any of us, is right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Hans, always a pleasure. We'll put your article, by the way, explaining what might happen in this election if we have this mail-in vote chaos. It's Trump suggests we may need to redo presidential election. Is that possible? put it on our Facebook page so you can read it. Hans von Spakovsky, Heritage Foundation. Hans, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sure. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, a growing national network of pastors committed to the authority of Scripture and preaching the whole counsel of God. We believe biblical obedience is the foundation for revival, and impacting our culture for Christ is our duty. For too long, the pulpits of America have been silent on the important issues such as marriage and family and assault on our liberty. Join us in the battle for truth on Stand in the Gap weekend, Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. on American Family Radio, and visit us at AmericanPastorsNetwork.org.
To sharpen the biblical worldview of Christians and to share the good news of Jesus Christ. That is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. I'm host David Wheaton, inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, as we discuss all matters of life and faith from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on American Family Radio.
And seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf, he went to see if he could find anything on it. When he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. From a distance, the fig leaves gave Jesus the impression that there was fruit on the tree. Upon closer inspection, the tree was fruitless. Perfect church attendance and ministry activity cannot replace actual Christ-like fruit produced in our lives. From a distance, it can appear as though we're bearing fruit, but what would we find with a closer look? Are we content with fruitful appearance, or do we yearn for the real thing?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with the Life and Liberty Minute. We will elect a president on November 3. The difference between the two candidates and the two political parties is stark and unmistakably clear. The Bible says, "Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord." Republicans believe this. Democrats do not. Democrats booed God out of the building and out of their party in 2012. This year, at their national convention, they kicked God out of the Pledge of Allegiance twice. This is a political party that worships the state in the same way that most of us worship God, as the source of ultimate authority, provision, and blessing. That is simply godless Marxism. The Bible also said it is the fool who says in his heart there is no God. The choice is clear. Do we want to be governed by fools or by those who share the faith of our founders and the God of the Bible?
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. On Friday, President Trump tweeted that the deep state at the Food and Drug Administration has been slow-rolling promising treatments for the Chinese Communist Party virus for political reasons. By Sunday, he was able to announce that the FDA had cleared one, called convalescent plasma, for emergency use. Good news. Better yet, the president secured the agreement of the FDA's commissioner that, if a treatment is safe and effective, those afflicted with the CCP virus have a right to try it. Dr. Stephen Hahn's agency knows that the safety and effectiveness of an even more promising treatment called Oleandrin has been established to the point where it should be made available for widespread, life-saving human trials and sold as a natural supplement. We have a right to try Oleandrin, and the FDA must clear the way for us to do so now. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
You want the failed policies of Mayor Bill de Blasio or Mayor Lori Lightfoot, Chicago, or Mayor Jacob Fry brought to every city and town in this nation? If left-wing Democrats can't run a city, why on earth would you let them run your country? We have such incredibly run cities. Such incredibly run cities. The problems we have are the radical left.
All right, that's the president, and he's right about that. And as a matter of fact, there was a lot of problems yesterday. First of all, let me go to Chicago. There's a lot of things to report to you, but Chicago continues to have violence and looting and all of this lawlessness. And so MSNBC actually asked Lori Lightfoot, the mayor of Chicago, a pretty direct question. And based on what you heard President Trump just say, the problem is these mayors, the Democratic mayors are ruining their cities. And so the anchor at MSNBC actually asks a hard question. I want you to hear it, and I want you to hear Lori Lightfoot's answer. Clip one.
Mayor Lightfoot, it's Willie Geist. Thanks for being on the show this morning. I want to give you a chance to respond to President Trump, who invoked your name a couple of times in different appearances yesterday on the campaign trail, as we just played. What do you say to him when Americans look at pictures of Chicago stores being looted still all these months later? What are you doing in your city to restore order and to stop some of the chaos that we've all seen on TV?
Well, luckily, it's minimal. But yes, we do absolutely have our challenges. We have people who are afraid and scared because of COVID-19. We now have literally tens of thousands of people who are unemployed because of the economic downturn occasioned by the shutdowns that were necessary because of the president's failed leadership on COVID-19. And we're dealing with the reckoning across Chicago, as in many cities across the country, related to systemic racism. So we are on the front line of an incredible moment in our civic history, not only in Chicago, but across the country.
All right. So her answer is they haven't got too much trouble there in Chicago. And what trouble they do have is because of the president. It's because of the president's policies, his failed handling of COVID. That's the reason the looting on Michigan Avenue took place, and that's the reason things are happening the way they are. It's the president's fault. She's got the answer. And I would just say to you, this part will give you an insight. When you hear Mayor Lightfoot talk, sometimes you actually think that she's rational and caring about her city. But I just want to tell you another story that, to me, demonstrates that she's not about her city at all. You may recall that when everything was shut down in Chicago, and still is, and no one could get haircuts, no one could go out to eat, none of that, Lori Lightfoot was seen having her hair done. And her response to it was, well, I have to make public appearances. I'm in an unusual position. I have to get mine done because I'm a public person. I'm the mayor. So no apologies. That was her response. Well, now we know, because police have told us this, that Mayor Lori Lightfoot has placed hundreds of Chicago policemen to build a perimeter around her neighborhood because, she can't have trouble, even though she's signing off on the protests around the city that have become violent in many cases. She's all about that, but she has suggested, or she has made or forced these policemen who don't have a choice, and trust me, the city is already groaning under the number of retirements and people resigning from the police force. She's putting several hundred of them in her neighborhood. And she says, I'm not going to make any excuses for the fact that given the threats I personally received, given the threats to my home and family, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure they're protected. I make no apologies whatsoever for that. Is that not like all of these people who don't believe in guns being available, these public people? Like celebrities who have their bodyguards, their guns, it's different for them. It's different for them. It's different from Lori Lightfoot. She, she's important. So it's okay for her to co-opt a couple of hundred of Chicago policemen to protect her neighborhood and her wife in their neighborhood because, she's not going to apologize for that. So you see how this is going and you see why the president is right about this. In fact, last night and over the weekend in Portland, it just blew up. We had several different groups. We had Trump supporters. We had part of the Proud Boys. We had other groups who are not down with Antifa and Black Lives Matter, and there was an all-out war. And the police were absent. There was fighting. There was, one guy. Look, you're never quite sure what happens in a case like this, but we saw pictures. I mean, they were fighting in the streets, just all out fighting with whatever things that they had to fight with. Some of it was like you know, bottles of urine and other substances, which you can imagine. And they also had like shields, but I mean, they were downright fighting. Look, we can't have this anarchy in our streets where we have Portland has just, you know, defunded a huge portion of their police department. And so the police said, there aren't enough of us. We can't go out there. We're not equipped to handle this. And so and then you had the members, I think it was Antifa. I don't know if it's Black Lives Matter or Antifa. Who can tell the difference these days? Because it has nothing to do with color, and it certainly doesn't have anything to do with politics, because they're all Marxist anarchists. So whoever they were, they went into neighborhoods in Portland, and they went in with a guillotine that they had bloodied up, a big guillotine. It was not a full size, but it was big. It's probably, well, I'm just guessing from a picture I saw, probably looked like it was 8 feet, 9 feet tall, and they had a teddy bear in the between the blades. And they were marching down the street out in front of people's houses saying, get in the, that terrible word, streets. Get in the blanking streets. Yelling at people saying, with the guillotine, saying you need to get out here. You know, you need to be out here with us. And then they started burning American flags by the guillotine and cheering. So that's what's happening. No police and just the people of Portland, you know, hiding behind their shades. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what they can do. I really don't know. I don't know if they just haven't shown any courage, or if they really are just so overwhelmed that they're helpless. If you just think about what would happen in your community if the police were absent, if the criminal elements were just allowed to go into your street and into your, you know, your neighborhoods without protection. I don't know. But that's kind of where we are. And so in Charlotte, North Carolina, where the Republicans, at least a portion of the convention is taking place, a lot of the meetings and business meetings and decisions of the delegates. Protesters were out in the streets shouting at diners, and they're shouting, white silence equals violence. So they have bullhorns, people are trying to eat, and they're shouting, the blood of Breonna Taylor. Breonna Taylor was that girl, the police, she was with a guy. I don't know if it was her home. I honestly don't know. But she and her boyfriend were in this place. The officers knocked on the officials, as well as the police officer, and Taylor's boyfriend claimed that the officers knocked on Taylor's apartment door. It was her apartment. Presented themselves and opened fire after Taylor's boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, started shooting. That's what their story is. But the protesters say that the police just burst in on them and she was shot in the crossfire. So and that's what they kept shouting, the blood of Breonna Taylor. So that's what's happening in those cities, and you can imagine there's probably more happening than that, but we don't know about it. So that's where we are, and that's why it's absolutely true. We have crazy people running these cities, like Mayor de Blasio. It's unbelievable what he's allowing. People are leaving New York City in droves. I've heard that apartment buildings and condominiums are emptying out because people don't want to stay there. It's at some point, it's going to look just like Detroit. Remember what Detroit looked like? That burned-out city where people were living in vacant houses and building fires inside these apartment buildings just to keep warm. I mean, it looked like I remember seeing a long documentary on Detroit and what had happened to it. That's what New York is going to be. That's what Chicago is going to be. How could they not be? And that's because of Democratic policies. But I will take it further. Look. This is all about destruction. If it makes no sense to you, just remember, it's all about destruction. It isn't just another way of looking at things and maybe some way to, you know, I have this, we should have big government, we should have small government, we should have high taxes, we should have lower taxes, we should have abortion or not abortion. Those are disagreements on policy. We are talking about people who want to destroy and deconstruct everything. It is Marx's mantra. It is you destroy everything. You want to destroy the foundations, sports, churches, organizations, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, you name it, anything that you affiliate with and find camaraderie with, that you give you a sense of community and belonging, families. Marx wanted to destroy the nuclear family. That's why Black Lives Matter, that's part of their platform, is to deconstruct the natural family. Why? Because if they can isolate you, each of you from your family, the groups that you belong to, the things you affiliate with, the things that you love, the things that you draw strength from. If they can isolate you, they can control you. That's exactly what's happening. And guess who will control you? It will be them. It will be Mayor de Blasio. It will be Lori Lightfoot. It will be Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It will be Rashida Tlaib. Those will be the people because they are the bulls. They're the loud voices. They are the radical voices. Of course, it'll be some people quietly doing that, manipulating in the background. A lot of Democrats are that. A lot of the leadership in the Democratic Party are hardcore Marxists. They just never said it before, but we know they are. And we certainly there are tons of, remember when Alan West, when he was in Congress, he was such a firebrand, and he did a whole piece on how many communists there were in the Black Caucus. And at the time, he was so ridiculed and so, how, you know, that's just so over the line. But I guarantee you, he's absolutely right. And so this is what we're dealing with, and we have to fight back. I want to morph into a different topic because I'm trying to update you on a lot of things. Right now, we have, the whole world has gone mad. I have to tell you, airlines have gone mad. Airlines have gone, I can't think of a nice word, crazy. If you've flown lately, you probably know that. JetBlue is an airline I've flown a lot. And there was a mom with six children by herself on a flight from Orlando to Newark. Her youngest was 2 years old, did not have a mask on, and so they decided they wanted to take her off the airplane. It sounded like this. Let's listen. 16.
I could try, but they don't even want me on the plane because...
Hi. Do you realize she's two?
I do. And I also, it's not something that we can excuse because...
So, should I tie her hands? What should I do? Should I hold her hands?
We have to deplane.
No, I'm not going to deplane. I could try my best, and I could give it to Eve. If she has a pacifier in her mouth, is that a problem too?
So, the in-flight cruise, if you're not traveling on this flight...
Well, I am, but I paid for these flights. I'm using my seat, and I have six kids, my luggage is out in the bottom. I'm not going to go anywhere.
So you can either come off with us now.
Why should I come off?
Could you please?
Why should she come off? I paid for these flights, and I have six kids. I'm not going anywhere. I didn't do anything. I don't know why. Is it just saying this steward was on my case of flights coming here? He's on my case. I swear this will be in the media. My husband's an attorney, and I swear to you guys, this will be in the media.
Yes. There is a zero tolerance.
About what?
We have to wear facial coverings.
Okay, so if I put on her mask, is that I'll put on her mask?
It's already too late.
What? Too late for what?
All right, I'm going to interrupt because I'm running out of time. But basically what happened was she says, you hear her, she's getting so upset. Can you imagine? Those of you that are moms, if you had two kids on a plane, you get little ones and you're trying to manage them. But she's got six. She's got them on the plane, all their luggage. She's seated and her two-year-old doesn't have a mask on. And they come and tell her that she has to get off the plane with all of her kids. You've got to leave. You have to get. And she said, she's just 2 years old. She's only 2 years old. She's not supposed to have. And they said they'd change their policy. And she said, what if I put a mask on her? Can I put a mask on her? And I don't know if you heard it. The attendant said, it's too late. And the mom says, what do you mean it's too late? What do you mean it's too late? You have to get off the plane. You can't fly on this plane. And so they made this mother, JetBlue, made this mother get off the plane. And that's really interesting. I would say a lot about it, but you hear the music. I just caught this, a study that says the odds of catching coronavirus on a plane are very small. But reason has nothing to do with this, and children don't pass it on. Do you know that also? Children don't pass on coronavirus. And if they get symptoms, they're very mild, and very few little kids get it. It's just madness. And I'm telling you, it has to stop. All right, Sandy Rios back with you. Happy, in spite of the news, to be back with you. We're going to do this together, aren't we? We're going to face it to the end. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.